Hey y'all, welcome to another episode of Jesse's Fireside Chats. The Big Pharma episode was going to be super long if I did it all in one, so I decided to make it into a series. So this is part two, and in this part, we're going to be talking about SSRIs, mental health, and a couple of other things that I don't have enough to say to give them their own episode. In the last part, we talked about pharmaceutical ads. So, this is part two, mental health, etc. Let's get started. So, first thing I'd like to mention is, it is kind of weird that the number of people on SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which are supposedly meant to cure depression, it's surprising and weird, actually, that the amount of people taking them is going up, while the number of people who are depressed, quote-unquote, is also going up. You would think that if these drugs cured depression, that depression would go down. Because, I mean, it's like, for example, when more and more people got the measles vaccine, you had less and less cases of measles. I know that's not the same thing as a pill, but it's another drug that a lot of people get, and as we've noticed, more people get the measles vaccine, we get less cases of measles, and among the people who have measles, most of them don't have the measles vaccine. So, I mean, that's how that's supposed to go. If a drug is supposed to cure something, or a treatment is supposed to cure something, then we should expect to see the numbers of people who are infected with whatever that thing might be, or affected by whatever that thing might be, to go down. That's the way that's supposed to work. But in this case, it's like they're both going up, and something does not add up here. The math does not math, as the kids might say. So that's definitely odd. I'm not even going to get into the controversy of how many violent criminals are on these and all that, because we don't really know why these drugs would be causing those thoughts in people. We know that they do because the label says that it happened. But I'm not really going to get into that because, first of all, others who have platforms have already pretty much beat that horse to death. And I'm not reinventing the wheel myself here, but I did want to mention this topic. So that's a whole other can of worms that we're not opening today. But it is still worth considering that, you know, it's weird how the amount of people prescribed these drugs is going up, while the amount of people who are suffering from the thing these are supposed to cure is also apparently going up. Now I am going to get into something I have not heard a lot of people say, and that is that I fear that while the side effects might not be exactly the same as with opiates, I fear that the SSRIs are the new opioids because, again, while I acknowledge that this is not exactly an apples-to-apples comparison, both are highly addictive, and, you know, we hear people say, oh, well, people don't think they're addicted to these things. Alcoholics don't think they have a problem either, but they do. So, I mean, and so both are highly addictive, and with both, the people who need their fix, if you will, go to the doctor, and they say, oh, I have, in the case of opiates, it was pain. I'm in pain. I have this, 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 and this. With these, it's, oh, I'm depressed. I have depression. I have, I can't get out of bed, blah, blah, blah. And so both are prescribed in large part based on how the person claims to feel. And with the SSRIs, it's even more so, because at least if you're going to claim you have pain, you know, the doctor who is worth his salt is going to say, okay, where does it hurt? Unless he can clearly see that, I don't know, you have a massive open wound, or you have a cast or bandage or some other very obvious indicator that you have an injury. If you don't have that, the doctor's going to say, okay, where does it hurt? Now, some people do get good at faking having injuries because, you know, they get addicted. They have to do what they have to do, they feel, in order to get the thing they're addicted to. But the doctor's going to say, okay, where does it hurt? He might even say, okay, why does it hurt? What happened? You know, so people at least have to put together a story, real or imagined, or both. Sometimes it's a combination of both. And with this, people do have to put together a little bit of a story. They have to at least say that they are depressed or whatever, that they don't have energy to live or whatever it may be. But they don't have to come up with as much of a story. They don't have to say where it hurts or why it hurts. They don't have to say, oh, I fell off a truck and this happened and that happened, and next thing I knew I broke 7 bones and I had to go to the hospital. You know, they don't have to say any of that. They just have to say, oh, I'm sad, basically. So it's kind of worse, because it's easier for people to get their hands on these things. And these highly addictive things that more and more people are getting prescribed. So I fear that, and especially too, we kind of understand what opioids do to you. We don't fully understand the brain. So we don't understand exactly what these things do, these SSRIs. So I fear that in a way, this is worse, not only because it's easier for people to get, but also, as has been said by others, the brain is more uncharted territory. How our thoughts work and all that is more uncharted unless you are like me and you acknowledge the basic obvious fact that a lot of mental illnesses originate in the spiritual realm, which leads to another problem. Which is that because mental illnesses originate in the spiritual realm, people are trying to cure a spiritual illness or a spiritual, maybe not illness, but problem with a physical solution. And that never works. It may seem to for a time, but in the end, it never works. Because I know we're not machines, but just for an analogy, let's say that your phone is constantly dying all the time. Every 30 seconds, maybe not every 30 seconds, but every 10 minutes, it seems like you have to recharge it. And it just never, it's always at 1% all the time, constantly. And you decide, okay, maybe it's my cord. So you're constantly buying new charge cords, because you think that they're all broken, that none of them work, only to find out that no, your battery's just crapping out and you need a new phone. Now, again, I know that's not a perfect analogy because we're not machines, but maybe that'll help you understand that what's happening here is people think that a condition that is caused by a more serious problem, aka a spiritual problem, is solvable by a less serious, because it's temporary, physical problem. Because that's the thing, our bodies are temporary. We're here in this world, but we're not of it. So that's the issue that people are having, and it's actually an issue that I've noticed with a lot of problems that we have in our society. Is a lot of problems that we have come down to people trying to solve spiritual problems with physical solutions. If I were to list them all, we'd be here until I'm 87 and all my teeth are falling out. But that is definitely a trend that I've noticed. So, now that I've said everything I want to say about that, I'd like to get into a couple of other little things I've noticed. So first, I think it's kind of funny that the same left who is always bashing Big Pharma, which Big Pharma has a lot of issues, don't get me wrong, I'm not a member of the Big Pharma fan club, but it's funny that the same left who is always bashing them, oh, they're too expensive, they're too this, they're too that, they're also defending Big Pharma when it comes to vaccines, especially when it comes to both the quote-unquote COVID vaccines that they wanted to mandate for a time there, and then also now when it comes to RFK Jr., who he and I disagree on a lot of things, and I disagree with some of his takes on vaccines, and I'm going to get into that here in a second. But it is funny to hear the same people bash Big Pharma into the ground one minute, then defend it with glowing praise the next minute, at least when it comes to vaccines. Because they're the same people who will talk about how Big Pharma is evil and taking advantage of people and blah, 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 in one breath. And then in the next breath, and some of them even on the far left, were defending the crazy person who killed that healthcare CEO a few months ago. And so then the same left will publish these memes and say, like, oh, well, RK wants people to die like medieval peasants because he doesn't want vaccines, blah, blah, blah. So that fact that they can be so two-faced on this issue is just, it's funny to me. I don't understand how you can just completely swivel that far from one direction to the other, almost in the same breath. I will never understand how you can do that. Maybe that's what happens when you don't rely on biblical principles and you rely on just politics, whatever, the principles of the moment to guide you. I don't know if that's the case for all leftists. I don't want to make overgeneralizations about people's motives when I can avoid it, but it is telling. Let's just put it that way. It is telling how people can be so, can swing from one side to the other so fast on this issue, especially an issue that is so multifaceted, because vaccines are by no means all that Big Pharma does. Anyway, I do disagree with RFK on lots of issues, but especially on, especially would mean I would disagree with him the most on things like abortion and whatnot. Because he's, for most of his career, he's been very pro-choice, and you know my thoughts. But I do disagree with him on vaccines, because he has said things in the past about vaccines causing autism, and or at least I've read that he said that. I probably should do a bit more research on that, but that is something I've read, is that he agrees with that. Vaccines cause autism, garbage, and that's what it is. It is garbage. The guy who is first known to have said that vaccines cause autism was literally paid by an anti-vax group to say that vaccines cause autism. And there's just, there's nothing there. There's no proven link at all. And it's very, kind of disrespectful to people that have autism, really. And it's just, I don't know, it scares people, and there's just no, I can't think of any benefit that is derived from trying to link vaccines and autism, because there's literally no link there. I do know that vaccines in childhood have been steadily increasing over the years. That is true, although vaccines themselves have been around since the 1700s, I believe. Autism has also been increasing, at least according to every statistic I've seen over the last several decades. We don't know why. It could be, at least in part, that people just, in the past, if you were acting differently, you just got hit, or you were just, whatever you were doing, or whatever issue you were having was just overlooked, or you were sent to an institution, or whatever. So people that had it were just, you know, that's what happened to them. That could be part of it. It could be that people, you know, people these days are so into trying to make themselves as unique as possible, especially on the left. If you talk to almost anybody on the left, they'll immediately list every illness, every marginalized, quote-unquote, group that they belong to. So it could be even, too, that some people are self-diagnosing themselves, saying, oh, I have this, I'm different, look at me. That could be part of it. We really don't, and I'm sure more of it has actually been diagnosed over the years. I have seen statistics that say that people are being diagnosed, but like actually medically diagnosed with this more often in the last several decades. And we're not really sure. There could be a genetic component. We don't know. But we do know that there's no definitive link between vaccines and autism. So there's that. And then the other thing I'd like to mention is that some people seem to forget there is a happy medium when it comes to vaccines. There are more than two positions. There are more positions than either vaccines are great and people in lab coats can do absolutely no wrong and vaccines are miraculous wonder drugs that cause, that cure all of our problems and we're going to live in a utopia if everybody gets vaccines. Or all vaccines are terrible and we should just go back to living in the Stone Age and everybody dying, half the people dying at age 10 from preventable diseases. I don't know if the Stone Age, as people refer to it, actually happened, because the universe is only 6,000 years old and many people put the Stone Age well before that. But anyway, it is a common saying, so I used it. There are more than two positions. The position I tend to take is that some vaccines are more credible than others. I tend to get the flu shot every year because it's long trusted. It's a long trusted thing, and many people I know also get the flu shot. And you know, from the time I was a kid, I was taught that getting the flu shot is a good thing to do. It may not always help you prevent from getting the flu. You might still get sick, but you are less likely to get sick than if you don't get it. And I also tend to think that, you know, I first mentioned that in previous episodes that I don't believe in COVID, and that's still true. I don't believe COVID is a real thing. I think it's entirely a communist plot, both by China and by the rest of the world, to have an excuse for the elites to grab more power and give favors to their friends and the teachers' unions, the big box corporations that do their bidding, or at least used to more than they do now because they've sensed the swing in the culture. You know, I tend to believe all of that. So I'm not sure what these vaccines actually do, and what we're seeing now is that we were also lied to. We were told that the vaccines had no side effects, and yet we're seeing this rash of, you know, men dying in their 20s and 30s from heart issues, sometimes even younger than that, or people having these blood clots they didn't have before, or people that, you know, get the shot and then they, you know, they pass out and they die, like, few hours later. We're seeing a lot of that, and we saw more of it when everybody was being pressured to get the vaccine. So not only do I not believe in COVID, but even if I believed in COVID, these quote-unquote vaccines would still be highly questionable. I wouldn't trust them. I got the first three, but only because I didn't know then what I know now. So if I did know then what I know now, I wouldn't have gotten a single one. So I tend to be kind of middle of the road when it comes to vaccines. I don't think they're all perfect, and I think some are more credible than others. That does not make me on the same level on this issue as someone who thinks that, which I don't know how many people actually think that we should all just go back to dying of smallpox. I've not met anyone who actually says that or thinks that. Thinks that absolutely no vaccines should ever be administered at all under any circumstances. I've never actually met someone who said that. But, you know, that's an extreme side of this issue, and I don't have an extreme opinion on this issue. I am kind of in the middle, as I have said. So, there's that. Another little thing I'd like to mention real quick is my thoughts on the way we do health insurance. Which actually kind of are the same thoughts I have when it comes to the way we do car insurance. Which I know is not specifically related to Big Pharma, but I mean, health insurance is, so we're gonna go with it. My thought is this. You should not be legally required to wear a seatbelt. You should not be legally required to get health insurance. And you should not be legally required to get car insurance. However, comma, if you decide to take on the unnecessary risk of having no health insurance, having no car insurance, or not wearing a seatbelt, or all three, whichever the case may be, then you or your estate, because let's face it, if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you get in a car wreck, there's a very decent chance you will not make it, either at the time or you will die of your injuries later, should have to foot the bill for, you know, should have to foot whatever bill will be associated with that. You should have to assume the consequences of your unnecessary risk. The person who is insured and did wear a seatbelt should not. And the patients who are insured who go to the hospital should not have to pay your hospital bill because you are not insured. Those are risks you took on, so therefore you, as the person who took on the unnecessary risk, should have to pay whatever consequences, or, as I said, your estate, whatever the case may be, for that decision, because that is a decision you made. The person who was uninsured, or the person who is insured, my bad, and the person who did wear their seatbelt, did not make that decision for you. That person did not get into your head and tell you, don't wear your seatbelt, don't get health insurance, don't get car insurance. People can't do that. You can only control what you do. You can't control what somebody else does. And it's the same way. Somebody else can't control what you do. I mean, other than God. God can lead you. But that I don't want to get into the theological waters of that. But anyway, excuse any bad theology that might be there. I don't mean for any bad theology to be there. But the point is, you know, that's a decision you make. So you should have to live with it, not the other person. Those are my thoughts. It should not be the government's responsibility. I think when the government starts legally requiring people to wear seatbelts and buy insurance, that's nanny state stuff. I don't support it. But I also don't support others having to bail you out or having to pay for unnecessary risks you took, because there's no reason why you could not wear your seatbelt. Unless your seatbelt didn't work. You know, if you knew that your seatbelt didn't work, then you should get it fixed. And if not, well, then we should have some grace there. Because you didn't, it might not be your fault, especially if it's not your car, that your seatbelt didn't work. But in most cases, most seatbelts do work at any given time. So if you have a working seatbelt and you choose not to wear it, that's your decision. That's nobody else's decision but yours. And if you chose, again, if it's your car and you chose not to have insurance, that's again on you. And if you chose to not have health insurance, which is kind of hard to do because many employers have it, which I don't think it should be tied necessarily to employment, but that's another topic for another day. But yeah, there's nothing that forced you to not have insurance or to not have a seatbelt on in most cases. And if it is found that, you know, the seatbelt, say, didn't work or whatever, well, that can be proven and that can be adjudicated at a later date. But in most cases, those are the exceptions, not the rules. So those are my thoughts. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode or considered it to be food for thought. You can find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, the RSS feed, iHeartRadio, and Pandora. You can also contact us on our Facebook page at Jesse's Fireside Chats and on X at JFSCPod. And if you'd like, you can send us an email at jessesfiresidechats@gmail.com. That's JESSEAS firesidechats@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Feel free to pass this along to anybody you know that might be interested. And also feel free to come back for part 3 of this series. Thanks again, and have a blessed day.